Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the program. This is Trucking with Authority. This is a show dedicated to helping you build a better trucking business, from getting started as a driver all the way up to hauling loads under your own authority. For the next hour or so, I'll be the navigator on your journey to that better business. I'm your host, Kenny Long, and we can talk about anything from getting started in the business to dealing with FMCSA, record keeping and compliance, basic insurance regulations and requirements, IRP, IFTA, and anything else related to trucking with authority. Tonight we have a special guest joining us, Ms. Petra Volker from CUTC Inc. Petra is an expert in everything that this show is all about, and especially above and beyond what I know, she is much more knowledgeable about what it takes running north of the border and crossing the border both ways, as a matter of fact. Petra, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Great to have you on. Petra, why don't you introduce yourself a little? Tell us what CUTC Inc. can do for us.
Okay, my name is Petra. I'm a transportation consultant since 1990, based in Quebec, Canada. And I help truckers and trucking companies across North America get their first authorities, and I also help them maintain their authorities. I file fuel taxes and corporate registrations and annual returns, and I keep their permits up to date. I do everything in the transportation industry.
Sounds great. I don't know if you're on a headset or whatnot, but you're a little bit quiet. If there's anything you can do on your end, I've got you turned all the way up on my side here, so we'll work with it and see what we can make happen. But I know that a lot of people come to this show asking questions about Canadian authority, and there really isn't such thing as Canadian authority. It's not like here in the U.S. dealing with the FMCSA. Canada is not regulated quite the same way. Some provinces, I know, have a few different requirements, and, of course, crossing the border is a whole different issue. Now, you, of course, you can help, you said North America, so you can help companies on both sides of the border, right?
Correct. There are only two provinces in Canada that operate with permits, per se, like the MC number. That's Quebec and Ontario. Excuse me. Quebec and Ontario. For Americans coming up into Canada, they would have to register their businesses up in Ontario and Quebec, and all others just require IRP and IFTA registration. That's have them on your plate and your IFTA, so you report the mileage on your home jurisdiction's IFTA license every quarter.
Okay, and that brings up another good point. And let me remind all the callers, we have a lot of you on the line already. Petra is here to answer questions, so if you have anything that you wanted to bring up or any questions about the whole process, go ahead and press 1 and we'll get you on the air. Now, you were saying, we'll start with the basics. You can, of course, the Canadian border crossing stuff is a specialty of yours, but also the show from the beginning, I've talked about just getting people set up as a motor carrier in general, and you can do the whole process, right? So you can deal with the FMCSA and get them registered and everything. You can do the whole works for them, right?
Yes, and I know everything that's required. There's quite a long list of permits in the U.S. that need to be addressed, and if you do it yourself and you're not aware that these permits are required, you could get into a lot of trouble. So that's what
right.
I offer.
We actually had a caller last week, Jim, who's called into the show quite a few times, and he hired a company, NASTIC, as a matter of fact, which is a pretty big organization, and I've recommended them before, but they went through the whole process of dealing with the FMCSA, got his MC number, his DOT number. He thought he was ready to go until he listened to this show, and I started talking about the New York, New Mexico, Kentucky, and all the different little the highway
Oregon,
use taxes
yes.
and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody mentioned that to him. So he hired a company thinking this company will handle everything, and a big name company that has a good reputation, and yet they never mentioned any of this stuff to him. So somebody like yourself that knows all of the regulations and can hands-on deal with this stuff, that I highly recommend going through you as opposed to some of these big box store type companies that are doing this right now.
Right. Well, I've been in the industry since 1990, so I've seen all the changes come and go. I have many contacts with the government officials, and since my name is Petra, they all recognize me when I call in. It's a benefit. So I have a lot of contacts in the industry and working over the years with truckers and finding out exactly what they need and their specialties, so to speak.
Good stuff. Well, let's get started by just, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, I can be reached at 866-927-8294, or you can go to my website at www.cutcinc.ca, and we'll discuss your situation, what you're looking for, and what you would like to haul, because each industry has specialties, so there's lots of permits that are required.
Good stuff. Okay, now, so I'm going to assume that most of the folks that are listening to this show now have a pretty good understanding of the U.S. side and dealing with FMCSA. And, of course, if they're looking for somebody to help them with that filing, I highly recommend they contact you. But you mentioned something already that I know is a big topic after January 1st, and that is the IRP, the cab card, and having all the different states and provinces that you'll run. And I know that there's some new rules associated with that. Can you go into that a little bit for us?
Yes, that's correct. IRP, as of January 1st, 2015, has become FRP. Instead of International Registration Plan, it's now the Full Registration Plan. So when the carrier renews his plate, they will be given a full registration. That means they can go anywhere in North America. They are registered already. No more trip permits. So that's a big
great
change. Yeah.
And that's a huge benefit to anyone that doesn't have a regular route that, you know, may have
exactly
in the past.
Exactly, who's looking for loads and, yeah, they can, you know, call a broker and say, yeah, I can go, no problem. I don't have to worry about calling for trip permits, waiting for them on the road and waiting for my cell phone to ring saying that I can go, you know. So now,
oh, absolutely.
That's short
huge
step. Yeah, that's huge.
And it should basically level the playing field on the cost of the plates, too, is what I'm understanding. It shouldn't be quite as much of a, you know, pick-and-choose game when you're renewing and registering and trying to figure out what states with the estimated mileage and all the different
yeah
ways they had to do it. Now it's a pay-as-you-go instead of pay-it-forward kind of a system, right?
That's correct. And you will pay it forward in the next years because you report your mileage that you did actually do, and they will adjust the fees accordingly instead of perhaps and not even using it and wasting that money.
And that's perfect. That's really how this was intended to be from the beginning, and it's finally they've got it straightened out and happening. So that's good news.
Correct.
Now, that means that once a U.S. or Canadian-based carrier decides to cross the border, all of those states and provinces are already on the cab card. So
yes,
there's no different registration issues or, like you said, trip permits, anything to worry about now. That's already taken care
right
of. So that's a huge, huge issue that's already been eliminated. So that's good,
yeah,
good news for everybody. Now,
but
one
you have
question
to
about
remember
that
it only comes into effect when they renew their plate. If their plate renewed on January 1st, they're already full registration plan. But if their plate renews June, then they have to wait till June to have the benefit of this full registration plan.
And that was my next question. You read my mind. Good stuff. Okay. Now, the other question that we have quite often is, what are the numbers and things that are required on the side of the truck? And if you're just running the U.S., all you need is the company name and your U.S. DOT number, but things change a little when you go into Canada, is that right?
Well, in Ontario, you would mark your CVOR number, And in Quebec, no numbers are required, only the permit and the vehicle. You can put your NIR number, the R-5 numbers dash another number, but it's not required. It's not mandatory.
Okay, that's good stuff. So now, once you're registered with Ontario, you cross the border, you need to have that Ontario number. And what did you say that was, a CVOR number?
Yes, the Commercial Vehicle Operators Registration,
CVOR.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Got it. Now, so Ontario and Quebec are the only two that you have authority to run in, a special authority. All of the western states are still Wild West, and you don't need anything special out there, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right, now, for Ontario and Quebec, what is the process to get registered with those states, with those provinces?
Well, for CVOR registration, there is either a corporate application or an individual application. The process takes about 15 to 20 working days. They require basic information on your fleet and the owners of the company or the individual. And once the CVOR has been processed by the government, a written test must be completed. You can go to any driver check facility, motor carrier facility, and write the test there. And there is a small little fee afterwards of $32, and then they will send you your CVOR certificate.
Wow, I didn't even know there was a test involved in that. Okay. That sounds complicated, but I assume that you can walk people through it and make it a lot easier than it sounds.
Yes, definitely. I do all the paperwork.
That's good. I know that's very confusing. Now, I've been a big advocate for trying to help people go through the basic process of getting their MC number through the FMCSA, and that's fairly simple up front, and so I've been advocating doing it on their own, but especially when you get into dealing with individual states and provinces or crossing the border, now you're dealing with multiple governments and multiple complicated government websites and paperwork, and it is a mess. So in this particular case, when you start looking at doing this type of a change to your business, I highly recommend finding somebody like Petra to do this paperwork for you, because it is complicated. So let's see. Now, what about the other Atlantic provinces, like Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island? I was looking at one of the play sheets you sent me a while ago, and you had the extra provincial
corporate registration.
Stuff, and I'm not really. Yes. Now, what do those require?
Okay. For corporations doing business outside of their jurisdiction, meaning a Canadian company based in Ontario is driving all the way to British Columbia, let's say, and he has to register his business to do business in those provinces that he delivers to. Otherwise, if something happens in the province that he's in, his insurance may not cover him because he's not allowed to do business there. Unless he's a federally incorporated company.
Okay, that's big.
Okay, so if he's
important.
A provincially incorporated Ontario company and he wants to go to Quebec, he has to register in Quebec as an extra-provincial corporation. Otherwise, if something happens to his vehicle, if he has an accident or something, you know, God forbid, somebody gets killed, his insurance may say, well, you're not supposed to be doing business in that province, so we're not going to cover you.
Wow. That's
yeah, I've
huge.
Heard that happen before, so that's quite a big thing.
Now, I know there are some states that are doing that, too. Are you familiar with any of the states?
I believe New Jersey and Pennsylvania have gone that way.
Uh-huh, yeah, I brought that up a few times. I was hoping you'd nail that. I know New Jersey in particular is really hard on it, and they are impounding trucks that are not properly registered. And it can be, you know, especially if you're under a load or just any load that picks up or delivers in that state. And it sounds like it's the same situation up in Canada. So that's huge. And if you don't know that, that's one of those deals where you could find yourself in a lot of hot water if you don't have somebody that knows what they're doing register you.
Exactly.
Again, let me remind everybody, we do have some callers on the line. We have a couple people with some questions already, but anybody that has anything for myself or Petra, go ahead and press 1, and we'll get you in the queue. And I have some more stuff for you, Petra, that we can go on about, but I do have a question already if you're ready to take one.
All right, go ahead.
All right, Rodney in Georgia, are you with us? See if it's... Rodney, can you hear me now?
Yes, Kenny, I'm here.
What can we do
with
you?
Hi, Rodney, what's your question?
I'm trying to get my authority started. Been listening to Kenny's podcast. And by the way, thanks, Kenny and Elizabeth, for all you do for me and obviously for other people. I appreciate it. My question is, being a new authority, what kind of fees are involved since the system has changed and you don't specify the states? You're just registered in all the states. What kind of fee am I going to have to look for up front to get my plate initially, having no miles driven in any states?
What state are you based in?
Georgia.
Georgia. And
yes,
you're
ma'am.
Looking to haul everywhere, and this is the new full registration plan. You're looking at about $2,000 to $2,500 for your plate for the year.
Okay. Okay. And that will change the following year based on the miles I run in each state, right?
Yes, it might. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
They prorate the fee depending on your mileage.
Okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. Thank you very much. Thanks again, Kenny and Elizabeth.
You're welcome.
And Petra, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Rodney.
Thank you.
And, okay, so now let's get into the border crossing. And I know a lot of the callers are really looking for this stuff. This is the complicated stuff. This is where you're dealing with two governments at the same time and making sure you have all of your paperwork and your ducks in a row. And this is where things get way too complicated for me to try to go over it. And I know we only have another 45 minutes or so left in the show, so I know it's more than we can even cover necessarily in the time we have left here, but we can cover the basics. What does it take, Petra, to cross the border either direction, and how many, you know, what do we have to do to file, and what is the process now? And I know they've actually even changed it, and it's kind of been an ongoing change that's been happening for a while now.
Correct. Okay, so what a transporter needs to know, if he's going to come up into Canada and bring goods into Canada, he needs a PARS code, P-A-R-S code, that is with the Canada Customs. An application has to be filed, and of course I can do that. And it takes about 15 to 20 working days to process the application, and then they'll give you a carrier code. That's your PARS code. That code has to be printed on labels with barcodes. That's how the customs identifies the carrier as the shipper. And the labels are affixed to the invoice and bill of lading, and they get faxed to the customs broker about an hour before crossing. At the same time, there is an online e-manifest site that you must go on and register your load. On all the details regarding the load, where it's going and what it is, how many pounds, so on. And the broker and the carrier's information must match in customs systems before they accept it and you're allowed to cross. In order to cross, you take your paperwork with the barcoded label, and once you get to the border, they scan your code and accept you, and you're crossing. Now,
okay.
If you're coming back... Go ahead.
Just
to
clarify one thing, you said your information, that the trucking company's information, and the broker. And when you say broker, you're talking about a customs broker.
Correct. Now, both have to be entered simultaneously, well, not simultaneously, but they have to match in customs system.
Okay. And that's a little bit different. When we use the term broker on this show, oftentimes we're talking about just a property broker, a freight broker. But a customs broker is somebody that just deals with getting the paperwork processed for customs, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so that's a different thing. I just wanted to clear that up. Okay, and before we start talking about the going back to the U.S. side, there's a couple more things on here. Now, if I wanted to cross in, I need all of that, the PARS labels, the e-manifest, I got to make sure everything matches with the customs broker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's a couple of different PARS numbers you can get, being that if you're bonded or non-bonded.
Correct.
Can you talk about that a little bit, and what does that mean, really?
Okay, a bonded carrier is either carrying governmental goods, such as the post, the mail, or is required by the shipper, or if you're taking goods from the U.S., transporting it through Canada without delivering, taking a shortcut, for instance, and delivering that same load in the U.S., then you would be a bonded carrier. Most people are non-bonded carriers.
Okay, that's good stuff. Now, when I started talking about this show yesterday, I said that you could show us a way to reduce our miles and increase our pay and develop a niche. What you just touched on is a way we can reduce miles.
That's
now,
correct.
Say if you are,
cutting off those
if you
rate
are
links.
In, exactly. If you are in the state of Michigan or New York or so forth, and you take a load from one side to the other, once you register this way, you no longer have to go all the way around the lakes to get from one side to the other. You can cut right across Ontario, and that
correct.
Can save you a ton of miles. Or we have one caller who's probably on the line tonight who's in South Dakota and has a customer all the way in Augusta, Maine, and goes all the way down south of the lakes, which is a long way around, and he's looking at doing this to cut across the north side, which would cut off a lot of miles for him. So this could, in a huge way, reduce your miles, and you're already getting paid for those miles, so if you cut your miles in half, all of a sudden you've doubled your mileage pay. So this is a huge opportunity for anybody that's got customers in those geographic areas. Or if you have anything going to Alaska. Alaska is a market that I know a lot of carriers would love to go to, even if it's just for fun sometimes. But in order to do that, you have to be bonded to cut across through Canada. So
right.
These are some huge opportunities that we could take advantage of with this information.
Correct.
Now, the bond, as you were saying, is only for certain products or if the shipper requires it. Typically what that means is the product doesn't clear customs at the border. It clears customs at a designated facility, or it's never offloaded from the trailer in the country.
Correct.
So in other words, if you're cutting across that, to cut off the horn there, cutting across Ontario, you never offload those goods in the country. That bond assures that all of the taxes and tariffs and so forth get paid if, for some reason, that product did end up in that country. Is that right?
Correct. And the bond would be $5,000 per vehicle with a maximum bond of $25,000.
Okay.
Now,
where
it's not like the U.S.
I was going to get to that in just a minute, but where could people go to find information on getting a bond?
Well, they can contact their insurance broker. Most insurance companies can offer you the bond.
Okay, and that's good information. That's something that I get a lot of questions about, so that's good to know. Okay, so and as you said, most carriers are non-bonded, which means it's not required, it's not necessary. A lot of stuff can go up there without the bond, but it, you know, mail and so forth, it's a lot of stuff that it may open up some other opportunities. So if you are a carrier and you have a dedicated customer shipping goods across the border, that's something you can work out with your customer, or depending on what the product is, of course. And once you get to Canada, let's flip things around. Now we got to come back south. Or I do have a lot of Canadian listeners that may want to be looking at going south. What do Canadians need, or the Americans, once we get there, to come back?
Okay, well, we need what is a PAPS code. It's also a SCAC code, P-A-P-S or S-C-A-C. Most American carriers already have their SCAC codes. And that is the same thing as a PAPS code. No difference.
Okay.
So
standard
they,
carrier alpha code.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yes, same thing. SCAC, PAPS, they call it many different names. And also
okay,
there has to be ACE e-manifest. That's the same thing as the Canadian side where you have to enter it yourself here as well. Into the U.S., it's called ACE e-manifest, and it's also online. So
okay.
It's basically
good
the
stuff.
Same process. They're mirroring each other, or they're trying to mirror each other.
It's a good thing. Hopefully, once both systems are very close to each other, then it rules out a lot of the questions on what do I do next, because it's a more rubber-stamped kind of a system. So I think that's good, but it's still complicated. It's still a lot of paperwork and a lot of hassle, and you don't want to get to the border without having all of your paperwork ready.
Exactly. And I find the U.S. system is a little bit more redundant. The Canadian system is more clear-cut, but you must have this properly entered, otherwise you are not crossing the border.
Good stuff. Now, and then let's talk about the U.S. customs bonds. How does that work?
Okay, well, same goes for cutting off. It's through Mexico. If you want to take from Canada right through to Mexico, excuse me, you're going to have to be a bonded carrier. And then again, there's some government property that needs to be bonded. Bonding is much more expensive in the U.S. They're looking for $50,000 to $100,000 bond. There again, you can go through your insurance broker, insurance company. And the process is much longer. It's 4 to 6 months. And there can be some background checks and fingerprints required and so on. So it is quite intense for a U.S. custom bond.
Wow. So unless you have a real need for it, that's probably not something that you would want to even pursue. So that's,
no, unless,
that's good information.
Unless you want to go specialize.
Right. There are, I will say this, this whole show today could be a niche for somebody. So if you have a customer in Mexico or Canada shipping back and forth, or you could certainly look for one, there are a lot of loads that are picking up on the Mexican border in the U.S. going into Canada. I can tell you that. I see them all the time. Every time I'm down there, Laredo has dozens of loads every day picking up going to Canada, and you do have to be bonded to be able to carry those.
I just want to stop you right there. That's going to stop because the U.S. government is allowing the Mexicans to go right into the U.S. now. So,
yes, we...
you might lose some loads down there.
That's possible. That's a good point. So
mm-hmm.
That's good stuff. And I would imagine those Mexican carriers have to be bonded as well, although the way things are going, you never know. They may give them some kind of a waiver or something else. But okay, so that's good stuff. Good to know. We do have another question, if you're ready for it.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
Kevin in Indiana. Kevin, can we help you?
Hey, Kenny. I had a question. I'm a owner-operator currently leased to a carrier. I'm working on getting my authority. I'm wondering, once I get all the authority all in place, the actual mechanics of switching from lease to my carrier to operating under my own authority, wondering how that actually works.
Yeah, that's very difficult to juggle that because you need insurance to go on your own. You need your own insurance to have your own authorities. So if you apply for the authorities, you don't have a truck, so they won't give you the authority until you have a truck. And then you're paying for insurance on this truck, and you don't have the authority to move yet. So So that's a very tricky timing situation. Your authorities are ready to be granted, or they have been granted?
No, I'm still in the process of working on all of that. I'm just wondering, is it possible for me to continue to run under the authority of the current carrier that I'm running under, and then once I get everything set up on my end, change the stickers on the tractor over the weekend and start running under my own authority, or do I have to take time off in between the two? Am I making sense, or?
Well, you don't have to take time off, but I don't know. Your truck is right now insured by you or by the company?
By the company.
Okay. See, so the insurance companies won't insure your truck if there's already insurance on it. That's not going to work.
You would have to
give your notice. They would cancel the insurance. And then before your next insurance starts, it's going to be like 2-3 weeks that you're not running.
I see. I didn't realize that you couldn't have
two insurances.
You can't put two
insurances on a truck. No, that doesn't work.
Okay. That makes sense, though. I was wondering because I figured it would cost a little extra, but okay. So I would need to stop operating with the carrier I'm currently operating with, and then get things up and running on the other end.
Exactly. I'm sure he plays for your plate as well.
The plates are mine.
Oh, the plates are yours. Well, that's a good thing. Good thing.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I appreciate it.
I will add, though, that you can expedite the process as much as possible. You can get all of this stuff done ahead of time, and your application with FMCSA will remain pending until your insurance goes active. So you can get all your application process done. You can get everything else, your back office stuff, taken care of. And then the only thing FMCSA is waiting for is your insurance. So that could eliminate some of your downtime, and especially since you already have your own tags, your own portion plate, you don't have to wait for anything on that end. So that's really the only way you can speed this process up and try to eliminate the downtime as much as possible.
Right.
And
once they file
the insurance on the FMCSA, it takes them about 7 to 10 days to activate it. So you're still 7 to 10 days without working.
Okay. Take a vacation.
There you go.
There you go.
Good idea.
All right.
All right. Sorry to cut you off there, Kevin, but thanks for the call. Pedro, why don't you give your contact information out one more time?
Okay. My company name is CUTC Inc., and you can call me at 866-927-8294, or you can go to my website at www.cutcinc.ca.
Okay. Well, once we have carriers crossing the border, there are a few other regulations and rules they have to be familiar with, and I don't know if this is your area of expertise or not, but how about length laws and hours of service differences and things like that. Are you familiar?
Sort of, yes.
Okay. I know some of the Canadian provinces have length limits on the tractor-trailer combination, and especially how long the wheelbase on the tractor can be and so forth. Do you have any information
right
on that?
Yep. The wheelbase up in Canada is 244 inches. Maximum length.
And that rules.
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. Finish up with that.
And maximum length would be 75 feet. You can get over length permits for more.
75 feet. So any of these U.S. carriers, if you're running around one of those extended sleeper trucks, you really have to consider that if you want to go into Canada for anything. Now, there are permits for each province, or is it a Canadian?
Each province has their own set of rules on oversize. So, yeah, it's a difficult process, and depending on where you're going.
Okay. So that's good information to have if you have one of these extra-long trucks. It doesn't rule you out, but it's definitely something that you have to put a little more time into and make sure that you get all the proper permits before you go up there. So, and hours of service is another one, and I know that it's similar to the U.S., but here in the U.S., the biggest difference is here in the U.S. we have a 34-hour reset provision, and in Canada it's a 36-hour provision.
Right.
And there are some other differences as well. I don't know if there's anything in red flags that you would warn people about.
Red flags, no, but the Senate is supposed to go over that 34-hour restart again in September, so they might put that back on.
Right, yep, and everybody's got their fingers crossed that they see the light and they don't do that to us again. But Canada does seem to be a lot more reasonable when it comes to that, but there are still some it's important to read up on these rules before you cross from one to the other, because if you're running under Canadian rules or vice versa and you cross that border, you might find yourself out of service at the first checkpoint you get to. So you have to be really careful on that and make sure that you have all your paperwork and T's crossed and I's dotted, because this could be a big financial hit if you cross the border under a load and you end up out of service at the first weigh station just because you needed another 2 hours on a break or something like that. It's an easy problem to fix, and it's an easy problem to overlook if you're not prepared for it. So everybody needs to make sure that you have all that checked out first. Well, let's go back to Ontario and Quebec. And let me remind everybody, we still have a lot of callers on, and I know I'm just doing this interview style and blowing through this list, but I know there are a lot of questions. I get questions all the time on this topic, and Petra is far more knowledgeable about it than I am, so it would be better if you ask on air and get the information out. So go ahead and press 1. If you have any questions or comments about this whole process, Petra is the person to ask, and I can't thank her enough for coming on. And while she's here, let's take advantage of the information she's got. But going back to Quebec and Ontario, what is the process? We've already gone over the process of what you need, but as far as renewals annually, is there any time frames when you first get registered? How long does it take, and the renewal process and that type of thing?
Okay, the CVOR, like I said, it takes about 15 to 20 working days, so that's about 3 to 4 weeks, and there it does renew annually.
Ontario, right?
Yes, Ontario renews annually. It's for about a third of the price, so it's quite reasonable for renewals. You really have to make sure that your addresses are changed, because if they send you a renewal and it's not renewed and you get caught up in Ontario, you're going to be stuck there until you can get it renewed. Quebec, it's about $600-$700, and renewal is about $300 per year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So definitely not something that you want to just go ahead and get registered for if you don't ever want to run up there anyhow. It's kind of a waste of money
expensive.
And time. It can be if you're not going to use it. Now, if you do use it, there are a lot of loads that move into those provinces. Those are the two busiest of the whole country. So there is certainly a need for it, and it could be a great niche. If you have a broker or a customer that has loads going into Canada, chances are Ontario and Quebec are the two most common, and there are a lot less carriers available for that because it does require all this additional paperwork and the process of getting registered. So a lot of the smaller one-truck micro carriers are not ready to go into Canada, and it's, you know, definitely opens up more opportunity, and that's what we're looking for, is every opportunity we can get. So this is huge, and you can open up more customers on both sides of the border now,
and with
more
the dollar the way
lanes.
It is.
Exactly, and you know, if you have a customer already that may be shipping all over one country or the other, if they have a lane that takes you into, you know, across the border, this could allow you to open up a whole new customer base. So I think this is a good opportunity for everyone to take advantage of. So what are some ways that you can speed up the process of the border crossing? I know there's transponders and the FAST system, and what are those and how do they work?
Well, the customs transponder, either you pay $10.75 every time you cross the border, or you buy a transponder for $205 a year. It expires December 31st, and that does speed up the process quite a bit. FAST is a verification process by customs, and once you're FAST approved, you have a separate lane, which expedites everything. So it's very important you have a clean record and all the proper paperwork, and you can expedite your crossing.
And you can help set those up as well, correct?
Definitely.
Awesome. You're a one-stop shop. I'm good to hear that. So, but you brought up something else, having a clean record, and that may rule out a lot of folks who cannot cross into Canada from the U.S.
Anybody who has a DUI or a felony, they would have to apply for a pardon from the U.S. and then a waiver from Canada. That is a very lengthy process, about 6 months.
Yes, and you don't want to get to the border and have anything on your record unknowing that it's not accepted, because you will be turned back.
Oh, so yes, and you'll be red flagged. You will never be able to cross again.
Yes, and that would be horrible. That would be a huge mark on your business record, you know, as the opportunity that you have to go up there. You definitely don't want to take that risk. So if you have any questionable history, then you need to get that cleared up before you get to the border and they turn you away, because that would definitely harm you in the future. So it can be fixed. Like Petra said, it's a lengthy process, but you absolutely do not want to get up there without having it addressed ahead of time, or it basically it can't be fixed at that point. So, and of course, the other thing is the U.S. now requires a passport to get back into the country. So
correct.
You have to make sure you have all your passports and all your proper credentials and identification. So, and I'll tell you what, we have more callers on the line today than I've ever had on this show before, and I must just be asking all the right questions because nobody's raising their hand here. So I know there's somebody out there that has a question. Go ahead and press 1. And Elizabeth, even if you are a little nervous to get on the air with Petra, she was nervous too. It took her a couple of days to figure it out. So don't leave her high and dry and make her come on here for nothing. I know you all have questions, so go ahead and press 1. Get your hand raised, and Elizabeth will get you on the air, or she can just take your question and pass it on. I have this whole list of questions here I'm going through, and we're just kind of skipping all over the place. Oh, the other one, a real important one, Ontario and Quebec have a speed limiter regulation. Is that right?
That's correct. Not more than 55.
And that's something that turns a lot of people away, because here we run out west where speed limits are in some places 85 miles an hour now, and you have your truck limited to 65 or 105 kilometers. Is that right?
That's correct.
So that's something
to
consider.
And all they have to do is plug a key into your ignition, and they can tell if it's set and what set at. So there's no getting around that. If you stopped at a weigh station, they're going to stick that key in your ignition.
And it's an easy fix. And I will just say that don't rule those provinces out because of it. Most of the engine and shops and truck dealers on the border are aware of it, and they have special rates for just changing that one little number in your ECM. It only takes them a few minutes, and if you're crossing back out in the same way, they'll usually do it for the same price in and out, and it's a quick fix. You could just call ahead, figure out what the rates are to have your shop do it, and just include that in the rates on the way in and out of there. And it's certainly not something that should prohibit you from going into those provinces. Did you have anything else that you wanted to touch on, Petra? I'm just going down my list of all the different things that I've seen on your website and on some of the emails I had from you before, but I'm sure that since we last talked, which was almost a year ago when we first started making contacts, I'm sure things have changed. Do you have anything new?
Anything new? Well, we touched on the full registration plan, and what else is new? There's not a lot new going on. Well, from start to finish, permits should take about, 4 to 6 weeks max. Animals, oversizes.
Oversize, that's a good one. I was just looking at your oversize. You can help also with the oversize trip permits for the different provinces.
Yes, we do trip
and so forth.
Permits and annuals.
Okay.
And
okay,
each province is separate as well, so
now,
take that in mind,
we're looking
too.
At over, when I say oversize, you're looking at over-length trucks through the length laws, but also oversize for the loads, right?
Correct. I do everything from cranes to flatbeds with machinery on it, anything that's oversized.
Okay, so you're the one-stop shop. Let's go ahead and throw your number out there again while we're at it.
It's 866-927-8294.
And the one thing that I will say about you, Petra, and the reason that I continue to contact you is because I referred several people to you. You were referred to me by some of your previous customers that you still work with. They told me that you were the greatest and you really are helpful. You've walked everybody through the whole process. Since I've been referring you to different folks, I'm getting nothing but great feedback, and I appreciate it more than anything that you've come on the air. I know that a lot of folks are concerned that you were based out of Quebec and maybe you couldn't help them because they were a U.S.-based carrier. And, again, you can help everybody. And
and I can speak French and write French and read French, so if anybody has fines that they can't read, I can translate them.
One-stop shop, let me tell you. That's perfect. So we've covered the full reciprocity, the FMCSA. Now, with the U.S., states and the intrastate moves, what are some of the states that you include when somebody comes to you right off the bat and just getting started?
The specialty states, New York, Kentucky, New Mexico, Oregon.
And you mentioned New Jersey and Pennsylvania as well. What's the process to register there?
It's an extra provincial corporate registration. It's registering your business in that state, and your accountant is going to have to report annually how many sales you did in their state, how many miles you traveled, and so on.
And you just hit the nail on the head with something. Your accountant. This
yeah.
is not a DOT requirement. This is more of a tax issue. And
correct.
That's where a lot of companies are getting nailed for this, because they go through their atlas, the Rand McNally Atlas, it lists all the states and the DOT requirements, and those are not listed because it's not a DOT issue. You go through the Division of Taxation with those states. And I've talked
right.
about
exactly.
that before.
Exactly, like
show,
the extra-provincial corporate registration, it's the same thing. It's not part of the trucking industry, so to speak. It's not a permit, but it is a registration that is required if you're doing business there. So it's a corporate registration, not a permit registration. It's part of your business. You have to be aware of all parts of your business.
Right, and that's something that we've actually had. We have another podcast. One of my partners, Rico Muhammad, he has an attorney on once a month, and I asked, it's Henry Seaton is his name, and he works with NASDAQ, but I asked him the question about these intrastate moves, and he knew it was an issue, but he didn't really have details on it, and he referred me to his accountant. So, again, it's not really a DOT thing, and the confusing part is we have all of these regulations and these systems that have been put in place, and the deregulation that happened back in 79, and every state is supposed to work together, and UCR and IRP and IFTA, and it's all of these states and provinces are lumped into these single organizations, single point of contact, until you get into taxation, and every state and province wants their money. So that's
their form of revenue.
That, exactly. And right now, everybody is broke, so they are going after it. We do have another question. And again, press 1 to get in the list here. We've got about 10 more minutes left here, and I'm going to let Petra go back to what she does every night. And so Mark in Pennsylvania. Mark, are you with us?
Yes, good evening, Kenny. Thanks for having me on. A couple of questions going back to maybe what you were discussing earlier about the wheelbase and the weights. Is the wheelbase, the 244-inch wheelbase on the tractor, is that for all provinces, or is that just Quebec and Ontario?
No, that's all provinces.
That's all provinces, okay. Now, I understand in Ontario, I used to run up a couple years ago. I haven't been up for a number of years. I understand in Ontario, as long as you're not pulling over a 48-foot trailer, the wheelbase on the tractor is not an issue. Is that true or false?
That's true.
That's true. Okay. So anything over it, now, is that under 48, or is 48 and a...
The 48 is the max, yeah.
Okay. And Quebec, if I'm not mistaken, you can get a permit, a yearly permit for a longer wheelbase tractor?
Yes, you can.
Okay. And one other thing here, again, this is what I've been hearing, so I'm trying to confirm or deny.
Right.
The for Canada, on like what we'd call a spread axle, a 10-foot-2 spread, we're not Canadian does not allow what we would be the 40,000 pounds on the spread?
No, it does not.
Okay. What is the legal weight on the spread then?
It's 22,000.
22 per axle, or?
Oh, might be, wait a minute. That's kg, sorry.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So, yeah, I can't convert that in my head. Yeah, so 22 kg for the spread. So that's the same as a closed tandem then?
Yeah.
Okay. And also for the wide bait singles, has Canada began to recognize the weights for them, or are they still downrated for the wide bait singles?
They are starting. Quebec and Ontario are leading with that, but the western provinces are a little slow on that still.
Okay. What about the Atlantic provinces east?
No, they're not there yet either.
They're not there. Now, what would they allow on them, and how much do they downrate them?
If you give me a call tomorrow, I can give you all the regulations on that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that was just That was most of what I had. I just quick questions there. As far as running the Atlantic provinces, there's no yearly permit or anything like that that you have registration that you have to do quite like there is for Quebec and Ontario, or do one of those provinces over there have something like that?
No, they don't. It's only the extra-provincial registration if you are a corporation doing business in their province.
Oh, okay. Much
if you're delivering to their province, then you should register extra-provincially.
Okay. All right, that answers my question. Thank you.
Very good.
Thanks.
Good stuff. Thanks for... And we lost Mark, but... Thanks for the call, Mark. And we're winding down the show here. I had one other quick question for you, and that is hazmat. I know you help register companies to carry hazmat, which is a whole new ballgame. It's a lot more regulations and insurance requirements, and then, of
training,
course, crossing the border. Yes, and then crossing the border, of course, saying a hazmat load raises a lot more red flags. Can you tell us a little more about how that works and what you can do for us?
Well, as long as you have the right training and certificates and insurance coverage and placarding, and there's quite a list for hazmat, your personal information has to be verified to haul hazmat, and crossing the border, if you have all the necessary paperwork, everything is entered correctly, it shouldn't be any more difficult than a regular load.
Okay, now, in the U.S., of course, when you deal with FMCSA, you have to have a special safety permit to carry hazmat. How about in Canada? Is there any special regulations up there?
Yes, you must be hazmat trained and have a certificate.
Okay. And we've got another caller, Marcus out of South Carolina. And I will say, Pedro, this happens every week. We're winding down the show, and I've got three callers just popped up on deck down in the last few minutes. But we'll try to knock these out as quick as we can. Marcus in South Carolina, can we help you?
Hey, how are you today?
Fantastic. What can we do for you?
I'm just calling about the super white in Canada. In the western provinces, you can obtain a permit that you can hold 34,000 pounds on them, on a tandem axle. But in Manitoba, you need to have the axle with a 2007 and older truck, 2,300 millimeter wide, 2008 and newer, you need 2,500 millimeter wide.
Right.
So, otherwise you will be out on the scale.
Yes.
Well, I appreciate
that. Like I said
to
the previous caller, if he calls me in the morning, I can get all those weights and regulations out to them.
Yeah, I just...
I think we can bring him back. You still with us, Marcus?
Yes, I'm here. I just... I have super lights on my truck. That's why I thought give it in. And Manitoba is very special in this, so you need at least 2-inch offset when you have a 2007 or older truck. Otherwise, you can't drive in the province of Manitoba.
Right.
So in Manitoba, you do have to have the 2-inch offset. Is that what you're saying?
When you have a 2007 or older, if you have a 2008 or newer, you need even more offset, because then the total width of the axle from the outside tire, one side to the other side, outside tire, needs to be 2,500 millimeters.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I know our tire experts under Kevin Rutherford's group are often recommending that just get zero offset, but obviously that becomes an issue up there. So I appreciate the call, Marcus. We'll go to Kevin in Michigan. We'll try to blow out these last couple of calls as quick as we can. Kevin in Michigan, are you with us?
Yes, sir. I just had one little quick question and one little quick comment. I was wondering, I run in on Ontario every day, and being in Michigan, we have a bunch of multi-axle combinations. We can go way over that 80,000-pound weight limit, but I've never been able to find a resource for what sort of combinations are legal to run in Ontario. And I was just wondering if there was somewhere that kind of spells that out.
You can go to the MTO site.
Okay.
And they have the vehicle configurations all spelled out.
All right. And then the other little quick thing I was just thought about is guys that are running trailer tails on their van trailers and reefer trailers. I'm not sure, are those allowed yet in some of the provinces? I know they were working on legislation to allow them, but I wasn't sure if they're allowed to be deployed when you're in the province yet or not.
I'm not quite sure about that. I would have to look that one up. I know they were talking about it, but I don't know if the legislation went through or not.
Okay, because I noticed a lot of Canadian carriers that have trailer tails, and as soon as they get over the border into Michigan, they hop out and deploy the trailer tails because they can't have them deployed in Ontario yet.
Right.
So.
Okay.
So that was just a quick little thing I thought of. So.
Thanks, Kevin. I know that the company that makes the trailer tails does make a special version for the Canadian side that's slightly shorter that was legal up there. And I do remember reading an article. I have a trailer tail on one of my trailers, and I do remember reading something about how it is legal up there now, but I'm not sure if it's in all provinces or not. I will see if I can get some information on that as well. We're going to wrap this up. Let me just first say you can find us on Facebook, Trucking with Authority page, or the General Discussion on Trucking with Authority group. You can also find a lot of the negotiations and sales stuff in the Revenue, Knowing Rates and Lanes page. And again, check us out here every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you listen to the recording, the call-in number is 646-668-2277. Again, check out Rico Muhammad's show tomorrow night with Brokers and Beyond and Chad Boblett. I'm sorry. Tomorrow night is Rico with Rates and Lanes, and Thursday is Brokers and Beyond with Chad Boblett. And Pedro, why don't you go ahead and give out your contact information one more time.
Okay, that's CUTC Inc., and the telephone number is 866-927-8294, or you can go to my website at www.cutcinc.ca.
Fantastic. And again, as I've told everybody already, Petra is the expert all things Trucking with Authority. So anything from getting started, dealing with FMCSA on the state side, or setting up for crossing the border, or Ontario, Quebec, registering in all the provinces, she is the one-stop shop for everything. So I can't recommend enough for anybody that needs the assistance or the advice. And Petra, thank you so much for coming on, and I'm sure that you'll be getting a lot more questions here over the next few weeks as more and more people listen to this show again. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kenny.
And I'm sure we'll be in touch soon.
Yes.
And that will wrap things up for us tonight. Thank you all for joining us. And if you have any questions, again, post that on Facebook, or you can give Petra a call or find her on her website, cutcinc.ca. Have a good night, everyone.